960 Pinder on Twitter. This is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It's 9:11 on your Monday morning. Oh, back in the right seat. The 9 is alive and well. Onyx is back. Pinder finally back to the 9 to 10 slot. Missed my boys, but top of the list, my homeboy Darren Haynes. It's been 5 weeks since we've chatted. You gave me the wave on Saturday. I was in the Hot Stove Lounge. It had been too long. You actually waved and then left. I started to cry. You missed the tears. How are you?
Yeah, I didn't think I had the wherewithal to hang in there for the next commercial break. I've heard some of those callers.
Yeah, it would have been that. Plus, it's going to look like one of the final scenes of Titanic if we both were left to the commercial break. Just tears. It's been some time. What did I miss?
Welling up deep inside.
Yes. So when I was leaving, here's what was making news with the Calgary Flames. Dennis Weidman was heading to a neutral party, third-party arbitrator to see if his suspension would be reduced. There's no trade deadline yet. Any news? Anything happen?
Yeah, I feel like I'm going through withdrawal on Dennis Weidman. I haven't talked about him for about a week.
Oh, man. It was a mess. I do want to sort of rewind the clock a little bit before we get to some of the more current issues pressing with the Calgary Flames. Just generally speaking, a thought on the trade deadline and what Brad Treliving did with some expiring assets and a deal that I didn't necessarily see coming with Marcus Granlund getting swapped to Vancouver in exchange for Hunter Shinkarak.
Well, I think he did very well, and he turned almost everything he could have for expiring contracts into something, and the comparable to what his colleague in Vancouver did, which was had basically the same number of guys going to UFAs, and they got nothing in return and dealt none of them side by side. When you look at where those two teams are in the standings now, and they both were basically on the same path through the rest of the season. That is being sellers for Treliving to kind of come away with the haul he did, especially compared to Vancouver, where Benning ended up with nothing. Yeah, it's I did very well to kind of build up that assets, build up that currency. He always calls it currency. We'll see if that if that draft pick they get from Dallas is a second rounder or a first rounder, but it gives you opportunity. And those draft picks, they turned into stuff last year. I mean, it was the draft picks they got in the Glenn Cross and Berchi deals that allowed them to get Dougie Hamilton. It enabled them to move a couple picks and move up and get Chillington. So you have more options when you have more draft picks, and that's what Brad wanted to do, and that's what he did.
It's funny. I hosted Saturday for the Hawks and Flames, and they entered the game, did the Blackhawks, tied with Nashville in points because Nashville had beaten Columbus earlier in the day. Now, Chicago's piled up 4 points since, but there was a Flames angle to this story of Chicago possibly being caught by Nashville. How much better would you feel about that conditional second rounder if the Hawks had to go to LA and come through the Pacific Division?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I mean, Dallas has got a tough path. Every year we keep thinking St. Louis is going to be finally they'll break through, and the Blackhawks obviously have the pedigree and the history there. So it's no slam dunk at all. But for Dallas to at least go into the playoffs with home ice advantage, certainly if the Blackhawks weren't in their path, that works a little better for them. But either way, there's I would say there's still about, 50-50 chance that could end up being that kind of 27-28th overall in that first round if Dallas can get through to the Final Four.
Yeah, and then that would be a really nice asset. You mentioned they have 3 second-rounders as it stands. If they have 2 second-rounders and that third one turns into a first round, I mean, that you've got some serious chips to play with on draft day. One of the areas we've talked about at length since about mid-season was what in the world are they going to do in net? Do you think those 3 second-rounders and potentially one of them being a first is the kind of currency, the terminology you use, that would allow them to go find a number one netminder? Because the UFA class, I don't think, has a guy that I would call a legit number one.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what you need. And the other variable, of course, is what is ultimately decided on expansion, because I think some goaltenders start becoming more available than they would be otherwise if teams realize that they're at risk. If you're sitting there in a team and you think that you're going to lose a pretty good goaltender for nothing, then you're more motivated to sell one of those goalies for something this summer. So if the expansion proceeds, whether it's one team or two, that's another variable that could enter the equation here. So it sets up to be quite interesting, especially revolving around whether or not teams are going to be able to protect just that one goalie, you know, a year from now.
Staying with the sort of the deadline-ishy themes and the assets collected, Jyrki Jokipäkä came back from Dallas in the Chris Russell deal. What kind of player is he, and how has he played versus the expectations you had for him when he arrived?
I've been pleasantly surprised. He plays more physical than I expected. He's a big guy. There's a lot of size there. He could probably fill out a little bit more, but I've been pleasantly surprised. They're not overly taxing him right now, but you know, he's getting a decent minutes and hasn't looked bad. So, you know, I think I'm curious about why he wasn't being used more in Dallas, to be quite honest. So again, this is games where, you know, they're easier games to play when you're not, the pressure isn't on. They're not in a must win playoff chase right now. But for a guy that's joined a team and a system in progress, and we saw how Dougie Hamilton, you know, struggled with that in his first month after he came here and had a training camp. So I think Jokipäkä is fitting just fine, and I'm be very interested to see how he fares next year once he's got a camp under him and see what kind of role he slots into.
The other guy that I was really keen to see stretching back to development camp this summer, even before that, because the reports and the reviews I'd had on him were so strong, was the former Ivy Leaguer who earned his NHL entry level after a year between the ECHL and the AHL, Garnet Hathaway. Is there any way this guy isn't in the lineup to start next year? I've been thoroughly impressed with what he's brought to the bottom six.
Yeah, no, he's your ideal. He's your ideal crash and bang fourth line right winger. They don't have any depth on right wing. He's going to be at the exact kind of pay rate that you'd love to have. I mean, you know, they're not going to be able to continue to have guys at like 600K in the top 12. You're going to have to pay him a little bit, but he's still got another year. So next year he's a huge bargain, and he just goes out there and doesn't matter who he's going against. He crashes and bangs and he brings a lot of and he's making a couple other guys in similar roles look not so good. So credit to him, he started off with a very plum assignment of skating in kind of that top six for a while. I mean, he had spent a game on the top line, so he's been less noticeable from a scoring chance perspective, but you still notice him a lot, and that's exactly what you want to do if you're in his position. So I think he's done with this trial exactly what he's needed to do, and I would be surprised if he's not part of the 12 or 13 forwards next year.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. He makes some guys look overpaid. You were sort of searching for a word. The first thing I thought of is, well, there's a lot of guys in the bottom six I don't notice as much, making way more money. And of course, you've got Mason Raymond making $3+ down in Stockton. So I'll take a guy under $1 million, given what he's given the Flames in this final third of the season. Top line right wing. What did I miss here? It sounds like everyone's had a turn trying to play with Johnny and Monty. I didn't mind what I saw Saturday with Freddie Hamilton, although I'd be a little foolish to suggest that's a long-term fit. Just one game looked good.
Yeah, that's a carousel. I mean, I think they'd really like Michael Ferland to work there. That would be, if they could make that work, I think that works great for the team. He's affordable. He's got some muscle that hopefully, if he's doing what he should be doing, he's looking after, his line mates, especially 13, who took another whack in the arm from Duncan Keith on Saturday.
Couple.
I mean, you're going to have to deter that stuff, because if Gaudreau ends up on the sidelines for 6 weeks with a broken wrist, this team is going nowhere fast next season. So, that's something that's going to be a consideration, but Michael Ferland has to be better. He has to be more consistent. He needs to be, I think he seems to get comfortable, and he's not in a position to be comfortable yet. So, I don't know. I have no idea. If you were asking me right now who's going to open the next season playing right wing on that line, I haven't got a clue. Maybe it's a guy that's not even in the organization right now. If they strike gold in free agency like they did last year with Frolik and can somehow get Okposo to come here from the Islanders, but he might be too rich. So I don't know. It's a great question, and that's why everybody's so caught up in the draft, because they look at those two right wingers from Finland, and I know Brad Treliving likes them. He was over there, saw him in person at Christmas at the World Juniors. that would be ideal, to have someone like that that can kind of grow, same age bracket, and kind of grow with this team. But that's a lot of things need to come together for that to be the option.
Yeah, and I'm sort of with you. I mean, I don't know that guy's here that's going to play on that line. I don't think you want to split up Frolik and Backlund, given what you've seen from them. It seems like Bennett, Hathaway, and Colburn have been pretty good. Bob seems to like his pairs, and if he's around in the fall, you know, Johnny Monty are together. What about, I sort of look at this situation similar to what, you know, Vancouver had when the Sedins were at their peak. It doesn't almost really matter that much who's there. As long as they fit a bit, they're going to have great years. So could you bring in someone trying to build up value in a one-year deal? I mean, Anson Bloody Carter scored 30 with the Sedins. We've seen guys that have been bought out go on one-year low-money deals to try to win a cup. Brad Richards with Chicago last year, Christian Ehrhoff with the Penguins a few years ago. Would it be out of the question to think they could get someone that would be willing to take low money just to build some value back?
Hey, bring back Lee Stempniak.
Yeah,
hey.
Lee. I think he's
never know.
He's earned some term, I would think, with the year he had. But that it's that kind of signing that New Jersey made. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. Like, that's right, because the pairings are kind of where Bob likes to roll. So if you have kind of, and I totally agree, Backlund and Frolik are kind of meant to play together. They've got great chemistry between the two of them. So you're right, and I wouldn't be surprised if this question is the one of the storylines next training camp, and we end up seeing four different guys in that top line role over the first months. But yeah, if they can find and that certainly was not a carrot to dangle. If there's someone that's looking to kind of bounce back, a guy out there that's kind of maybe not seeing the offers that he was hoping and tries to maybe do a 1 year and build up his value again, if the Flames say, hey, you know what, you may end up on our top line, you know, count me as interested. So that might be a card they are able to play in the summer.
The news of the weekend, I suppose you've been tardy getting to it, but I did want to sort of rehash the 5 weeks away. Now that we're up to speed on what we've missed from each other's lives, I would like to get your take on Mark Jankowski, who was eliminated Friday, his Providence Friars losing to Minnesota Duluth. His collegiate career is over. What happens next?
Well, I have no doubt that an offer that's out there right now is one that is to start next year, and there's a contract that begins next season, and that's why we haven't seen a move yet. If that deal that was there in Brad Pascal's hand was to burn a year and start in the NHL this year and get a few games in, he would probably be taken to the ice for game day skate in Arizona today. So I don't doubt that's where it is. We know, you know, Brad Treliving sees that AHL is definitely the place he needs to be. And in that regards, the whole burning the first year to me is, who cares? That is a non-factor because, you know, he's going to be in the AHL. That's where he's going to be developing. Even if he starts here, that doesn't mean he's going to be here next year. He's going to be the same path as a Hanowski, a Bryce Van Bravent, Kenny Agostino. They got that cup of coffee, then they went back to the level they should be at. And Jankowski, I think he'll probably be in the AHL for a couple of years. So, so you burn a first year. Are you concerned about that? Not really. You just qualify him and keep him and roll out, you know, bump his wage up 40, 50 grand. And so that's a non-factor to me in terms of the storyline.
So then why hasn't he been signed yet? Hang on, because if it's not a big deal, this thing should be done, right?
No, that's the thing. I don't think that's a big deal, but I think the offer right now is for him to do what Kenny Morrison did last year, where the Flames said, hey, Kenny, this is what we're offering. It's a two-year deal. It starts next year, though. We're not going to burn a first year. We think for you, you should go to the A. We're not that in love with you that we need to start you here like that. That was the offer, take it or leave it. And so now will it come to, maybe Jankowski says, you know what? No, I wanted to turn pro last summer. You said, go back, do another year. I've done another year. This is what I want. And then it's going to be back in Calgary's hands to decide whether they do want to go down that path. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do go down that path and Jankowski is in the lineup maybe by the weekend. So that's that. If I had to guess at what unfolds, I think right now he's got an offer to start next season. I think they'd love to see him take that offer, go down to the American League on an ATO, which he then is eligible to do. If he's got a contract that begins next season, he can sign a tryout and he can play in the AHL this year.
Right.
And I think that's what they'd like, is to see him down in the AHL this year and maybe not kind of get that I don't know. You don't want to set him up for failure, right? Like, you remember when Berchtesgaden came up and had that magical,
yes,
sensational, he comes up from junior, and he almost never recovered from that heightened expectation. Like, who knows? Maybe Jankowski finds some puck luck. He scores two goals in his first game in this final week of the NHL season, and all of a sudden the hype is up and that sort of thing. So I think they'd love for him to start right from the get-go, go down to the AHL. And the only way he can go to the AHL this season is to sign a deal that begins next year and go down on a tryout this year.
Stockton has 9 games remaining. The Flames, of course, have 7, with the first falling off the calendar tonight. So it will be curious. It is a bit of a game of poker. The Flames don't want to give up that first year. Certainly, if you're an agent for Mark Jankowski, your job is to try to get that first year expired. So we'll see. Bit of a waiting game here.
And here's the other angle on the Jankowski. Now, you know, do I think Mark Jankowski is a for sure NHLer? Absolutely not. But here's where I would disagree with the, the second rounder. Hey, you get a second rounder. That second rounder would be 51st overall. That is, if you look back, and I did some research, and I went back over 12 years, you're basically looking at a between 1 in 5 and a 1 in 6 chance that that guy turns into an NHL player. This is not picking 31st. This is not the first pick of the second round. You're almost into round 3. So for me, I think the odds of Mark Jankowski making it to the NHL are probably better than that 51st pick, you know, in the 2017 draft making it to the NHL. There's quite a good possibility neither will make the NHL. But that's where I'm at. So I think, you know, you prefer to keep Jankowski. I think optically, you never want to be the team that's walking away from first-round picks. That has a little bit of reputation tarnishment, I think. So I think there's a lot of reasons to kind of keep the asset. If Jankowski makes it to the NHL, it's going to be way quicker than a guy you're picking 51st overall in the 2017 draft.
Well, so that's the biggest thing, Darren. In my mind, it's the time thing is huge. This was a guy that was drafted in 2012. If you look 4 years ago to a second rounder they picked, it was Pat Seeloff. That was 4 years ago, and we still don't know if he's an NHLer. I don't know that you don't have to wait another 4 years to find out if that second round pick is someone or not. I'm with you. I would think they get this thing done. It's just a matter of who's going to blink first in this contest between Jankowski's agent and the club. What about Brandon Hickey? Also, John Gilmore. There's a few other guys whose seasons have come to an end that have had good years.
Yeah, I'm curious on the Gilmore thing. He had a nice year offensively, good puck mover. But they do have kind of quite a raft of defensemen now in that not ready yet, will need time. I mean, you know, they high on Ryan Culkin, and they couldn't even find him a job in the AHL. They had to stick him in the ECHL for a while. So I'm not sure about Gilmore, whether they keep him or whether they could walk away from him. He's a seventh-round pick. It depends on what they see. I think it wouldn't hurt to, I mean, with again, the compensation thing, that's only for first-round picks. So if you don't sign John Gilmore, you get nothing for him. So I think he would be someone that could certainly give him a chance to play in the A for a couple of years and see what happens. But, you know, I don't think it's a slam dunk that they'll do that. And as for Hickey, I thought maybe, you know, when he made Team Canada at the World Juniors and there was the speculation he might go to the Dub, you know, maybe he is a guy that leaves after 2 years, but I don't know. I don't have a strong sense that will happen. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he goes back to Boston U for a third season. But I think definitely, if not this year, he's not a guy that's going 4 years. He would turn pro a year from now.
And you wouldn't want to let that guy get to a fourth year for just what we've been talking about with Jankowski. That's a guy you'd be more worried about losing than Jankowski, I'd think. And if he does get to April 15, you'd not be happy after, you know, being pretty excited about the skill set he's got. Darren, a pleasure as always. We will chat next Monday if that's possible.
Works for me.
Love it. Darren Haynes, right. Flames from 80feet.ca. One of the best in terms of anything, all things Flames. Head to the website, throw it into Google. Always something to talk about. The Jankowski one's interesting. I want your thoughts on it because he has been a lightning rod since the day he was drafted. It was Jay Feaster, John Weisbrod running that draft. They said, we think we got one of the best 10 players. There was mentions of, you know, similar arc as Joe Neuwendijk, a guy that was a high schooler that ended up going to college. I don't know that he's Joe Neuwendijk, but he could be Joel Otto. Don't know how excited you get about that or not. And if you're worried about burning year one, 960-960, we'll get to that. When we come back, though, big news in Blue Jays baseball land. We've got your spring training report, and the battle for the fifth starter has been decided. Sanchez, Floyd, Chavez, Hutchison, got news. Next, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the morning, only on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
yes, starters 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. That has been the dilemma for the Toronto Blue Jays. A good problem to have. Gavin Floyd, a solid spring. Aaron Sanchez, nearly perfect. Hutchinson wasn't bad. Jesse Chavez has started before. The controversy over the fifth starter has come to an end. An announcement this morning from the Blue Jays. To talk about us about this a little bit more, we welcome Jonah Bierenbaum from The Score onto the phone line. Jonah, it's been a while. How are you, buddy?
Hey, we're 6 days away from opening day, my friend.
Six.
I'm doing swimmingly. How are you, sir?
Ooh, 5 starters, 6 days. Yeah, I feel we could add it to the ramp there. This is big news this morning. John Gibbons saying Aaron Sanchez will be a starter. When you first saw that tweet, I mean, I know there's other things that are a result of that move have to happen in terms of the bullpen and AAA, but the debate had seemed to be more about Sanchez than who should be the fifth guy, because he's certainly been good enough, but what about the innings? What about his success in the bullpen? Can he stay there all year? What was your reaction when you saw the news break?
Yeah, well, I think that if Aaron Sanchez wasn't able to win the fifth starter job with the spring that he had had, I think it would have suggested that this front office doesn't believe he could ever have success in the starting role, because he's been unequivocally the Blue Jays' best pitcher this spring, better than Marcus Stroman, better than Gavin Floyd, who, to his credit, has pitched really well. Just Aaron Sanchez was that much better. Despite the lip service that Mark Shapiro gave to Gavin Floyd, which makes sense, he's going to pump up his asset. Aaron Sanchez deserved this job. It's in the best interest long-term of the club, and I believe in the short-term as well, to have Aaron Sanchez in that role. I mean, you look at his pedigree, you look at how much they've invested in him, what a big part of this franchise he's going to be moving forward, especially with a lot of their veteran assets coming off the payroll ostensibly after this season. Aaron Sanchez is going to be a big piece of this team. And I think they owed it to themselves, just in terms of the surplus value they could eke out of this 23-year-old right-hander who throws a sinker at 97 miles an hour, to see what he can do in the starting role. So it's exciting both now. It adds some upside to an otherwise unspectacular but perfectly adequate rotation. And going forward, the Blue Jays have another hard-throwing stud that they can set up with Marcus Stroman and pencil them into the rotation for the next 3 or 4 or 5 seasons even.
Now, the news comes with a bit of, an asterisk at the end, or an asterisk, because they don't think there's enough juice in him to go a full year as a starter, moving from a reliever's innings all the way to a starter's role. I mean, that could be as much as 120 innings difference from year to year. Now, that's not necessarily this case here, because he started last year as a starter before moving to the pen, and there was injuries in the middle. But what do they do when this guy gets close to 200 innings? Will it be the threshold less than that, 160? Are you going to see off days mid-season? How are they going to manage his innings?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the benefits of acquiring all the starting pitching depth that they had this offseason is that, yeah, they could conceivably work in maybe a phantom DL stint, or maybe have Jesse Chavez or Gavin Floyd come out of the bullpen, out of their long relief roles, and maybe take a spot start. Gibbons suggested this morning that, it might be a concern if the innings start to pile up, but if he's pitching effectively and there's no signs of fatigue, I don't think they're going to slap a hard cap on him just for the sake of it. I mean, this is a guy who, throughout his professional career, he's topped out at about 133 innings in a season before. So, it's not ludicrous to suggest that he can maybe get up to 180. But, I mean, throughout the course of the season, a lot of things happen. We saw last year, he ended up on the DL with that lat shoulder injury for about 6 weeks. So, I mean, it's a really long season. And, there's a good likelihood, maybe he'll end up on the DL regardless. So, I don't think it's something that sort of they're planning for right now. But, I mean, if he's pitching really effectively and he's up to, 150 innings in the middle of, July, it's something that they'll adjust for, but it's not, I don't think, a major concern for them.
Where are you at on innings limits? Because I think we all hear about them and we all understand the dilemmas that teams face. But is there science to back them up that a guy can't go? They usually say, more than 30% more than the year before is kind of the numbers that, developmentally you want a guy to pitch big innings very slowly adding each year. Is there science behind this at all, Jonah? Or is that a question that we just assume we know the answer to? Because teams talk about it all the time like it's real.
Well, I think that as they investigate further into sort of the science behind pitcher injuries and specifically elbow injuries, they're finding out that it's really, really hard to establish causal relationships between really anything. I mean, we know right now sort of that there is a relationship between, say, how hard a pitcher throws and the likelihood of having a serious elbow injury. But, I mean, no, they're trying to establish these links. And, I mean, there's sort of soft science suggesting that you don't want to increase a pitcher's innings limit if he hasn't worked that hard in the past. But generally, I think that teams are, they try to exercise caution, but they're not necessarily, these decisions aren't necessarily informed by empirically proven, really, really reliable data. So, I mean, they just try to, you know, use intuitive judgment to be like, hey, he's never thrown 200 innings. You know, maybe we should slow him down. But generally, I think that you'll find that the Washington Nationals probably regret shutting down Steven Strasburg a couple years ago because, you know, the Mets didn't with Matt Harvey last year, and, you know, he took them to the World Series.
Yeah, and I was going to bring up the Strasburg thing because it was like, oh, well, they're young, and he's a star, and they'll be in the playoffs every year. It hasn't really gone that way. And this year with this roster for the Blue Jays, where it kind of looks like it could be the last year with a lot of the core that's here, you've got free agency coming up for Cecil, for Storen. Those are two of your three guys to close games. Obviously, the big sluggers, Bautista, Encarnacion. I mean, this could be a very looking team next year. You'd hate to see them have to shut down Sanchez as they're in the middle of a playoff chase.
Yeah, and frankly, I don't envision that happening. I think that if they project that they're going to be in the playoffs and Aaron Sanchez is going to be a major piece of that postseason roster, they'll account for that midseason and maybe, like I said, you know, a phantom DL stint or maybe come and have Jesse Chavez or Gavin Floyd take one or two of his starts, you know, slow him down a little bit as his innings are accumulating. But yeah, right now I think they're under the impression that Aaron Sanchez is going to be a major, major piece of their rotation for this 2016 season. And I mean, if they sort of anticipate that his innings are getting way out of hand, they'll adjust for that midseason because I just can't envision them shutting down Aaron Sanchez if they're going to be in the playoffs once again.
All right, so there's some ripple effects with Sanchez being named to the starting rotation, as many of us had hoped it would be the case at some point. We do know that Gavin Floyd and Jesse Chavez will head to the bullpen. Chavez has worked out of there. Floyd's been primarily a starter or an injured starter in his career, if I'm correct. And Drew Hutchison to AAA. Just a quick thought on those three announcements.
Yeah, I think that made sense. I mean, Gavin Floyd, you're right. He hasn't been healthy and an effective starter in the big leagues for about four seasons now. And Jesse Chavez does have sort of that versatility in his track record. Drew Hutchison, I think that everyone was anticipating this kind of decision. He was okay this spring, although the strikeouts weren't quite there and the walks were up a little bit. And I mean, you saw how he labored last year, and I think that this wasn't really a shocking decision, especially with sort of how much is at stake for the Blue Jays this year. And Gavin Floyd, I mean, once he got that guaranteed major league deal, I think everyone anticipated he would be on the 25-man roster, just a matter of what role he'd fill. And now he's going to slide into middle relief in a really, really good Blue Jays bullpen. But also, I mean, he remains stretched out, so he could slide into that spot starter role. But I mean, you know, despite sort of how Mark Shapiro spoke publicly about how he might configure his pitching staff for the 2016 campaign, this seems to be the optimal setup to me. And I mean, the Blue Jays right now, it's obviously their offense that generates all the superlatives, but they have a pretty decent and probably unheralded pitching staff that could be quite surprisingly good this year.
Also, following the news of Sanchez, there's some talk that maybe they'll just roll with a four-man rotation for the start of the season because of the off days they've got. They don't need a fifth starter for a while, and Marco Estrada gives him a little more time to feel right. Is there a level of concern here? Is this an excuse to buy a little rest for Estrada? Is there a serious injury concern if he heads to the IR to start the year, or the DL?
Yeah, I mean, he's had sort of that accelerated buildup of late because he got off to a slow start with the back injury. But, I mean, they have the off day built into the schedule. They don't need the fifth starter. They might as well use it. They announced he's not going to pitch in the Great Boot League finale on Wednesday. He'll pitch in a minor league game. So in the event that he would even need to open the season on the DL, they can backdate it. He probably won't even miss more than one trip through the rotation or, in fact, just miss that off day. So, yeah, I think there's a very minor level of concern. But outside of the home run ball, he gave up in his last start. He was quite effective. The changeup was looking good. Fastball command was off a little bit, and he mentioned he needs to refine sort of his command with his cutter a little bit more in the next, I guess, 6 days or so. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think that they're really worried about Marco Estrada. But, yeah, I mean, certainly having that off day in the first week of the season is a nice luxury if they want to give him a little bit more time to get ready.
6 days away from opening day for the Blue Jays, 11 from the home opener. We were chatting with Jonah Bierenbaum from The Score. Just a quick thought on the rotation. As I see it, with Estrada starting with a week off because of what you mentioned, the accelerated building up of his arm, I see Stroman, Dickey, Sanchez, Happ as the order first four in Tampa. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. You slide in the knuckleballer between the two young guys who throw pretty hard, and then you have the left-hander as well to wrap up that four-game series in Tampa Bay, give them a different look. And that also sets up Marcus Stroman to start the first home game of the year, assuming they don't use assuming they use that off day to get him an extra day of rest. So, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty decent-looking rotation. Obviously, there's not a ton of experience there. Marcus Stroman only has about 42 starts in the big leagues, and Aaron Sanchez only has 11, but tons of upside, and I think you saw what Marcus Stroman is capable of, certainly last year, coming back from that knee injury and then pitching well throughout the postseason. And Aaron Sanchez, when he was in the rotation last year, too, he showed flashes of brilliance. So there's lots of upside, and then he got the veterans who consistently outperformed the peripherals to back them up. And log high volumes of innings. So it's a pretty decent looking rotation, even if it's not exactly overflowing with proven established stars.
Sure, I'd agree. Very quickly, the bullpen. I see Osuna and Storen as either setter closer or setup guy closer, or just alternating the roles, or maybe looking for matchups. But two hammers at the end of the bullpen. I really like the second half of the season Brett Cecil had. He's obviously your go-to lefty in late innings. What about a Lugi and the long man versus the guys that get you to Cecil, Storen, Osuna?
I think that at this point, they're probably inclined to give that second left-hander's role to Randy Choate, who is a loogie's loogie, especially with Aaron Luke now expected to open the season on the DL with that elbow injury. But yeah, the back end of the rotation is pretty nails. And I mean, Roberto Osuna, speaking with John Lott earlier this week, he mentioned that, you know, he sort of suggested that Drew Storen will probably get that closer's role, but you know, it's entirely possible they do play the matchup because they have so many weapons at the back end of that rotation. And yeah, like you mentioned, Brett Cecil, he didn't give up an earned run after late June last year. So they have a ton of weapons. And I think they're confident that with Chavez and with Floyd, they'll be able to bridge the gap to their three, lights out arms at the back end of that bullpen.
It's funny, man. You look around the AL East and you watch the Royals the last couple of years. There's clearly been, I don't know if it's a philosophical change is the right way to say it, or maybe just more of an emphasis, but you want more than one guy that's lights out at the back. The Yankees, Betances, Miller, and now they bring in the Cincinnati closer from last year, Chapman. I mean, this is the Blue Jays trio is pretty formidable themselves. It'll be fun to watch how they decide to use them.
Absolutely, and the Red Sox did the exact same thing, bringing in Craig Kimbrell and then bringing in Carson Smith from the Mariners, although he's going to probably open the season on the DL with a flexor strain in his elbow. But yeah, I mean, just look at how sort of the free agent salaries for relief pitching is escalating as well, and you can tell that teams are now valuing this as an inefficiency. If you have an elite bullpen, you can sort of outperform what your expected record might be because you're winning so many close games by just throwing out 7, 8, 9 guys who avoid contact and just shut down the opposition for, one full trip through the lineup. So, yeah, and the Blue Jays are very much going to be on par with those other teams who have maybe a little bit more star power in their bullpen. But, Brett Cecil has quietly established himself as a top-end reliever. Roberto Osuna was doing things, as a 20-year-old last year that, it put him on par with very few historically. And then Drew Storen, who has a pretty strong track record of closing as well. And before Jonathan Papelbon came to town in Washington last year, he was one of the best relief pitchers in the National League. So yeah, the Blue Jays are very much on par, and that certainly seems to be the new team building, or at least pitching staff building philosophy now, is privilege the bullpen and see where they get you.
Pleasure catching up. Let's do it again soon. Thanks, Jonah. Appreciate it.
Thanks, pal. Have a good one.
All right, that's Jonah Bierenbaum, the MLB editor from The Score. Always nice to get the skinny, and no one knows the details better than he does. That is thorough from Bierenbaum, and there's the news. Sanchez will be in the starting rotation. Sounds like Estrada might skip his first turn to the bullpen. Go Chavez and Floyd. Hutchison to AAA. We'll step aside, come back with your thoughts. The text line wide open at 960-960. Mark Jankowski, bust, sign, walk. Maybe some Blue Jays takes as well. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Get connected. Text 960-960 to get your voice heard. Ryan Pinder in the morning on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Man, we are up against it. 5 minutes till 10 o'clock. Jim Rome show right around the corner. If your bracket's been exploded, I'm sure that's where he'll start today. LeBron's and Nancy, all that stuff too. Maddie, have you been paying attention to this LeBron stuff? He unfollows the Cavs on
Yeah, I did, but I didn't read too much into it.
That makes sense to me. We got J.D. Bunkus tomorrow as well. He's our weekly NBA guest. We'll fire that at him. Lots to get to tomorrow, and we're almost out of time today. Let's get to the text line, 960-960. Mark Jankowski, Blue Jays, what are the thoughts, front of mind? A lot of Jankowski here. Bring him up. Let's see what he got. Burning year one isn't a bad thing. Can you explain why they would burn year one? I missed that. Okay, so here's the dilemma with Jankowski, very quickly. He's done his collegiate career. He is a free agent August 15th. If he doesn't sign with the Flames by then, he can sign with anyone. So his camp has a bit of leverage. What are they trying to gain? Well, why don't we, instead of play on a tryout this year and your deal kicking in next year, which is a way of not paying a guy this year, why don't you give us year one right now? We'll come play up in the NHL, burn year one. He gets the full signing bonus and, what, 13 days of salary. So that's probably less than 10% of the season. So, you know, that's a decent amount of cash. Maybe it's another 90 grand or something. And the combined, you're talking about 150 to 200 grand maybe that this kid could make if he plays every game from tonight down the stretch. The opposite is make nothing, get your signing bonus for next year and then next year's salary. Well, I think if you're the player, you'd understand what he'd prefer. And if you're the Flames, it's a year closer to a second deal and maybe you're saving a bunch of contracts for other free agent signings before the draft. You only get 50 contracts. So that's kind of what we're waiting for. I don't think he'll go to August 15th, but the question is, will the Flames give him first year this year? Hey, Pender, what's Jankowski, when he's out of the slow cooker? I think he's kind of a Riley Sheehan type, useful, but not Sean Couturier good. That would be a homer take. I haven't heard either of those names, but interesting. Here's another text. I think Jankowski has earned his way through this whole process. He should get a few games before the year ends. If he plays well, great. If not, then you know he's starting in Stockton next year. But what do you have to lose, Pindy? Your thoughts. Well, what you lose is the first year of his contract. That's the whole dilemma. And again, does that matter? To some it does, to others it doesn't. The one thing no one talks about that I'm totally starting to think more and more about, maybe teams like getting that first year out of the way because guys would be cheaper after 2 years in the NHL than three. I mean, let's think about it like example-wise. Do you think, on average, very good players have better stats in their third year or second year? Well, you'd all say third year. He's more experienced. He's that much stronger. Maybe you're talking about a 21, 22, 23-year-old instead of a year earlier. Maybe teams can get a cheaper second contract by burning that first year and only having 2 years. I wonder if that's an equation that's accounted for at all. Lots of time tomorrow. Maybe we have news for it. A reminder, it's a Flames game day from the Gila River Arena in Glendale in Greater Phoenix, where the Coyotes and the Flames will battle for the right to go to the playoffs. No, they're both going to miss the playoffs. Rogers Calgary Flames hockey will start with warm-up at 7 and puck drop at 8. The Jim Rome Show is next.